Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we have finished Kings of the Wild. We made it through the wild.
I'm not doing a scream this time. This time I'm keeping it under control.
Okay, good. You scared me. You scared me bad last time.
I know. I'm sorry.
I have a warm up today, Dan.
Ooh,
and okay. I think you're going to be hyped about this.
Okay, Luke. Let's get going.
I have a little story. So I think we've talked about this on pod before, but you're familiar with the concept of the way you know if someone is unfit for social society is if they can't return a grocery cart.
A hundo, yeah.
Okay. Listener, I'm assuming you're also familiar with this, but the gist of it is for those that cannot return their grocery cart after they go grocery shopping to the collector thingy storage place. Mm-hmm. Are unacceptable to be in society. They're in need of re-education. I will tell you, Dan, by complete accident, I scolded someone for not returning their cart.
We're hype, Luke.
By accident.
I'm so fascinated now. I need to hear the details. I need to hear every part of this.
So here's how this happened. My wife and I were actually out of town. We were traveling, so it was not in my hometown.
Oh, the perfect crime.
So this person cannot hunt me down.
The perfect crime.
Coming out of a grocery store, and we were picking something up from like the pizza place down like on the other side of the building. Mm-hmm. And I was going to put the groceries into the car while she was going to walk over to the pizza place, mm-hmm. right? We walk out. We've separated. I am like one lane of cars down from her. She's kind of looking around. And I look back because I know where the pizza place is. So I turn back to her and say, oh, I think it's over there. Okay.
Oh, I see where this
is going. This to my wife. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, there is a man right between us. And I like not unbeknownst to me, like. But I was I was not paying attention to this man.
Yeah.
He was between us, and I said this to my wife, and then I started turning around, and then he said, what did he say? He said, I know, but its wheels are messed up. and at this point, I was like, oh, this guy's talking to his friend that I just don't see.
Yeah.
He's talking to someone else.
Yeah.
And then he we started walking away, and he was like, I come here all the time, man. Like kind of looking at me, and I was like, what? And I like started walking away, and I looked back, and he had left his cart in the middle of the street.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I just roasted this dude completely accidentally, and I'm glad it happened. It was great.
I mean, it's so revealing, the psychology. I'm gonna extrapolate this onto every single person that leaves a cart around. The fact that, you know, he could have assumed you were talking to someone else, but he, in his mind, knew what he was doing is fucked up. And as soon as anyone said anything that could be vaguely construed as a comment to him, he was like on the defensive immediately, like, no, don't say anything to me. I'm being a little goblin. And it's like, you fucking know. It's not like you don't know and you're just oblivious and you don't get it. You get it. Okay. Because as soon as anybody says anything in your direction, you're like, no, don't look at me.
Exactly.
These people.
A guilty conscience. I love also the two-pronged response.
Mm-hmm.
The first, which is the wheel is messed up. It's like, fine, but probably it's probably not. Because you got
it. It's not. Hold on. It's not. You wheeled it around the whole fucking grocery store. Okay. The wheel is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the follow up, which is I come here all the time. It's like, what? That's not an excuse.
This is what I mean, Luke. This is what I mean. It just really gets you deep in the psychology of these people. It gets you deep in their minds. Mm-hmm. Because what you said. Now, if I am a person who is a guilty conscience, what you've said is pointing out where the closest places to return my cart. Okay. But even then, it's a bit of a stretch because it's like, what's over there? Like, what? Who are you talking to? What are you?
Right.
Are you talking to me? But if I'm guilty, it's like, you have to be talking to me.
Oh, man.
And the fact that you turned around, too. I'm sure that was just sort of like insult to injury in this guy's mind of like, oh, wow. He doesn't even care enough to follow up. He's just like.
I know. Just
that was
jab.
Cold, Luke. That was cold.
Very cold. I'm sure that man was seething for like, he probably still is.
Watch your back, Luke.
I know. Luckily, again, this was on the other side of the country from where I am now, but risky.
Oh, so risky. But I love it. I'm all about it, Luke.
I know. I don't think I would have the guts to do that on purpose. So
the closest I've ever got to that, actually, that's not true. The closest I've got to that recently was I was pulling out of a like a parking lot. I was making a right turn into the roadway. It's like one way, you know, and there's a car coming directly towards me and I'm waiting. And then this car turns into the parking lot and I put up an arm like, put your turn signal on, because then I could have gone. And the person in the car like shrugs at me and I'm just like, ah, you know what you did.
Mine is when people run the red light at the bike crossing and we make eye contact and I just look at them incredulously and that kind of thing. And they just look at me and keep going.
Yep. Dan on the bike flips the bird all the time. I don't know if I've talked about on the pod, but Bike Dan is an aggressive person. Bike Dan is flipping the bird. He's yelling at cars who are being dumb.
Yeah.
Bike Dan is somewhat. Bike Dan, I will say, is aggressive, but also when people acknowledge that they fucked up, Bike Dan says, that's okay, just watch out.
Uh-huh. Aggressive and defense.
Yes, exactly. A good offense is a good defense in Bike Dan's mind.
Right. You got to get on the bike. You got to get in the mix.
You have to get.
You
got to
get a little dirty. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of getting in the mix, Luke.
great transition. For finishing Kings of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. Before we get too far. I didn't think we were going to finish this story in this book. As I mentioned last episode, we seemed very far away from a conclusion to this story when we last left our party. But, you know, look at us. We made it. Before we get to the end, though, we need to start more at the beginning of this section. And I want to start with this hat, Luke.
Okay.
Because
we traded away.
Because we talked about the hat last time, but I need to just... We need to return to that point. This hat is too good, right?
Yes.
Because the hat sort of confirmed what we were speculating about. It can just like produce any food you want.
Yeah.
This is the most valuable magical artifact in the world. Like, how does this end up here? I am bringing a war party back to this tribe to steal that hat back.
Yeah, for sure.
This hat solves so many problems. What are we doing?
This is the strategic resource of a nation.
This hat in Castia, their siege is no problem. Literally.
This is so true.
Literally this hat, guys.
Listen, combine this hat with the mirror system.
What are we doing?
I don't know. Who made this, actually?
Another great question. Where do these magical objects come from? Who's making them? These can't all be druid artifacts.
Presumably all of these things are being made, and I think I asked this at one point, but presumably they're not just like loot boxes, right?
Yeah.
Where's the freaking blueprints of this thing? Okay, we're making multiple. Come on.
Well, yeah, but Luke, you can only make it once every solar eclipse that passes by a particular plinth in the field where the Druids started their empire. So it's really a rare, it's a rare event that allows you to make this hat.
Right. And they got the, they got the idea of making it from first principles, and they were like, it was a one shot.
It was sort of a one shot.
They could just do.
Yeah. So,
okay.
It doesn't even matter though, because one hat is enough. We don't need more than one hat. We are post scarcity, guys. Do you understand what that means?
Post food scarcity.
Sure. But like,
no one said anything about housing. Scarcity.
You know what? No, we're post housing scarcity because the wizard has a bag that's infinite space. Now I get what you're saying. This bag doesn't have any oxygen in it because they already talked about that. Guess what, Luke? No more closets anymore. No more banks. No more warehouses. Okay?
Okay.
None of that exists anymore. We don't need storage anymore. We have infinite storage. It's all housing now. It's all housing, and you go to the collection center that has the hat, and a chef reaches in and pulls you out whatever you want for no cost, and you can eat as much as you want. If
they've
Maddie,
actually got, they've actually got a couple people just rapid fire, hands in, hands out.
They're trained. They're specially trained to put their hand in the hat and pull it out of the hat as quickly as possible. Right.
If listen, and there's hours where there's different foods. Mondays from 5 to 6 is chicken breast.
Yes.
6 to 7, meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
And so on.
And so on. Yes. Yes.
When's
yes.
my French toast sticks?
Always.
Saturday at 10.
Yeah, but only every third Saturday.
Of course. Yeah, otherwise. Otherwise, it loses its specialness. Yes.
Mm-hmm. If Maddie was really a good king, this is what he's doing. Mm-hmm. If Maddie was actually good as a king, he is teaming up with Moog and just fixing all the problems in his republic, his new republic, Castia.
Right. Do you run into the problem? Do you run into the AI art problem, though, Dan? Do you know what I mean by this? Where it's like,
no,
Luke. Now food becomes soulless.
No. It's still food, okay? As long as it's not like, it's not styrofoam painted to look like a turkey, okay? This right. is real food.
Okay.
Unless we find out like a decade later, it's full of microplastics or something. And then they like,
right, which would be a real shame.
It would be a real, potentially a real problem because we wouldn't know the consequences of it for a long time. But aside from that.
Yeah. Plus you can still, it's a special day. I want to cook something nice to just like, because it's a thing to do. You can still do that.
You could be cook as a hobby, right? You just don't need to do it to survive anymore.
Right.
Forget the cure of the rot. You know what I think? Forget the cure of the rot. The hat is the thing that would be better for society.
Okay.
The cure for the rot is
probably,
don't go in the forest.
Yeah.
Okay?
Or deforestation. Listen, the first half of today's episode is just going to be a recap of last week's episode. because we do confirm that just smoking weed is a cure for the rot, basically.
Which feels so, I feel like Moog should be a little bit more disappointed in himself for this.
Yeah.
I get that it's simple and he's upset at how simple it was and he could have saved his husband, which is tragic. But also, like, dude, you were just bumbling around looking for stuff that had the rot. It's just, we came up with the solution. All I want to say is we came up with the solution. We've been there a total of 10 minutes.
Right, go to the rot conference.
Right.
lean on your fellow researchers. I don't know. I think, was this a little, at the end, was this a little throwback to Freddie Mercury, by the way?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, there was a ton of classic rock references in this last bit, especially all the bands that they got to come through the portal. This was our author just saying, like, I'm going to throw a bunch of references in here, guys, and it's going to be great.
Yeah. And it was.
It was good. Yeah, we loved it.
Okay, do you have any more to review from last week's episode?
Something we talked a little bit about that was almost explicitly mentioned in here was the, like, every time Clay was getting down on himself for being, like, kind of bad, it came from his father. Like, he recognized that these critiques were all coming from his, like, father's voice. And I just, that feels very in line with where we were on Clay last time, of, like, he critiques himself a lot, but it's not really valid. Like, he's not really a bad guy.
Sure.
So I just had to bring that back in. But let's get into some new stuff, Luke.
Wait. I actually am now realizing that I have a little bit of a callback as well.
Okay, yeah.
This one's much smaller and less serious. But I want to talk about our Arachnian for just 1 second.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Because there's another note here about his reference to him having six arms being, like, better for sex,
yeah.
And I just, like, I don't think that's true.
I also did not understand.
I don't think the limitation here is, like, number of arms.
No. I don't think the limitation is number of really anything. Like, I think we have the number of parts that is ideal for sex.
Right.
I don't think it's a number. I don't think anyone's ever like, God, I wish you had just one more something to make this experience better.
And it's never like, I wish you had three times the amount that you currently have.
Correct.
So
at least I've never heard that.
Yeah, listen, listeners, if you want to chime in, let him, you know, I'm curious. But I think he's taking the wrong approach.
Yeah.
For selling himself.
I also we do need to continue this discussion, though, because at one point Clay sort of sees Tiamax fight, or whatever his name is, and he mentions that he, like, blasts somebody with a web, and it's really effective. And Clay's, like, grossed out by it. We've gone backwards, guys. We were really progressive, and then now we've gone backwards, because it's like, listen, Clay, that's just his body, okay? That's just, like, part of his function. And also, maybe don't complain, because he's, like, an amazing warrior. Like, he is.
You love when Spider-Man does it.
Yeah, everybody creams their jeans when Spider-Man flies around New York City.
Love the vocab you've gone with.
But this guy doing like a super cool web move for a fight. Clay's over here like, it's sticky, gross. And you're like, you were so close, Clay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Just like, let the man live. Let the spider live. Okay.
I will say, six arms probably really useful for fighting, actually.
100%. And you know what? I'm sure there's some lucky lady out there who would love to get a big web, get attached, like, stuck in a big web. So maybe that's a bonus. Maybe that should have been his selling point the whole time.
Could be. Yeah.
I just, come on, guys. Have a little.
All right.
Have a little respect.
Riled up.
Clay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now let's talk. New stuff, I guess. I want to just say, we met them previously, but I think it's Etten, the giant with two heads, the kind of brothers. I'm really impressed with this guy's ability to come up with new descriptions constantly.
The creativity, impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Very good. Get him on the stick, get him a book deal, folks. Ooh. Creative writing.
Or a little motivational speaker.
Okay.
Put him on the motivational speaker circuit.
No, Dan, hang on. Get him on one of the meditation apps.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, his brother would be really good at it in the brief period where you know, there was only one of them left.
Right. Right.
I mean, sad. Tragic, we should say. Tragic. But it would make for great meditation content, I think.
I think so, too. What do you think about this, though? Because, like, honestly, for a second, I was like, is it actually less helpful to show how cool everything is that he can't see and experience? But I guess not. I guess it was nice.
Yeah.
To make everything really cool.
I think it was nice. You're saying how disappointed you would be if you were like, oh, I wish I could see that dope shit. Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess in this, that was just me for a second.
Yeah.
But I think considering the state of his brother, it was like, actually, this is pretty sweet.
Can I say, like, they talk about the ice road or the cold road or whatever it's called, taking its toll.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think unfair toll, frankly. The toll it took was the Ettin died. Like, come on. That's not really that big. In the grand scheme of things, not even that big of a toll. Okay?
Right, because he's not part of the group.
Not a part of the group. Mm-hmm. Also, you could say that, like, Clay lost his hand as part of it. Not even permanent. Not even a big deal.
Right.
Just like...
Well, I mean, nothing bad. Like, nothing permanent to our band happens.
Right. So, I feel like you need to take this road. You just find a new bard at the end.
I see.
You bring your
you're
bard.
Saying, you're, okay, you're saying there is a literal toll.
Well.
And you need to bring a sacrifice boy, basically.
I mean, honestly, that's what it felt like when the Ettin was the one who died during this. Yeah. It was like, okay, this is just a sacrifice boy for the road.
Because it was a risky place, someone has to die, so
he wasn't even
the non-critical person dies.
He wasn't even really part of their crew. He was sort of just along for the ride. He was just like a traveler, right, going in the same direction. It feels like it shouldn't count. Like, they need to pay separate tolls.
I agree. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I do want to back up a little bit from the ice road, though.
Okay.
We meet Shadow, who's another druid. Yes. And they get into a fight, and they're like, don't kill him, because if we kill him, then there probably won't be any of these guys left after we kill the last leaf.
Last leaf.
Yeah. Why do they care so much about the druids? I don't understand why they're upset about the druids dying off. This is a race of beings that enslaved humans for like centuries and like riled up a bunch of monsters to fight each other. I get that they're kind of neat, but they're not good people. They're not good creatures. These creatures are dangerous and kind of evil. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, all we've only experienced evil ones except for very briefly Rose's partner.
Right, and even the ones who seemed noble and cool turned out to be fucked up.
Yeah.
So, like...
I feel like it's just like, it like feels like they're an endangered species, I guess, and they have a lot of history backed up to them, so it like... It feels like we shouldn't, but...
But it's not like that, Luke. It's more like if elephants in 1,000 years became the dominant species and, like, people were slowly dying out and elephants were like, ah, no, come on. People weren't that bad to us, right? Like, sure, they made us do logging operations and, like, warm the planet dramatically. But, like, it's kind of a bummer to get rid of them, right? No, it's progress. Get rid of all of them.
Yeah, but then they have fun ears.
Just
they're kind of floppy like bunnies, I think.
You can make those. You can get a headband and put some ears on the top.
It's true.
Just cosplay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. Especially because this is after they had their like realization that the one guy that they had met, the former king, was actually a terrible person.
According to the story that they heard. Now, I imagine Gabriel was having a tough time accepting that.
Sure.
But yeah, like, they all seem super fucked up. And it's not even a question that they enslaved people for, like, a long time. No, I'm not. I don't care if those people are around anymore.
Yeah, this is a good point.
At the very least, they're so dangerous. We need to be on our guard 24/7 around these things.
Yeah, here's my one thing. I don't know if Shadow was doing any kind of crafting, but I do feel like they're overrepresented in crafting these magical items.
Mm-hmm. Oh, true.
Again, I don't think that's specific about Shadow, but gotta consider it.
Yeah. Right, like maybe you could get him to make you a cool bone sword or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that.
Give me that bone sword. Actually, speaking of the things that they have crafted.
Mm-hmm.
So this plays a big role in the story, but we learn about them in this interaction with Shadow, which is the, like, teleportation things.
Yeah.
And there's three of them. And to use them, you have to have the key.
Mm-hmm.
But the keys have all been lost, with one of them being semi-accessible, as we see later.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you guys aren't making, like, backups for these at all?
You don't have, like, a teleport locksmith you can call?
Come on!
Well, okay.
This is critical infrastructure.
Yes.
And you just have one key.
I think
for
this,
each one.
I think this is the part that's essential here, is this is critical infrastructure. So for sure,
yeah.
Like, this would be like if a drawbridge, only one person had a key to, like, let it up and down.
Right.
Like, there's fail safes for this. The counter to this, Luke, is that it's been a long time and all these people are dead now. So, like, imagine you come to a drawbridge, it's up, and you're like, we need to put it down somehow. And there's like a troll next to it that's like, I heard that if you had a key, you could put it in this slot here and turn it, and the bridge would come down. And it's like, yes, there are other ways to access it for sure than this. But, like, this is the only one that's survived over time.
Oh, okay. I see. I love that this metaphor, you tried to bring it into a real world scenario for us and then also threw a troll in.
Well, it's a bridge. It's got to have a troll somewhere around.
Of course. That did help me.
Yeah.
So to be clear, are you saying that at its heyday, there were more things that could be used?
Yeah, there's like a keypad on the right hand side of it that if you know the key combination, you can open it temporarily.
Okay.
But the knowledge about this stuff, it's not necessarily, I think, that the objects were lost, but the knowledge about what objects you needed to do with what is lost. Mm-hmm. And the only piece of knowledge that made it to the present day is this, like,
right
key.
Well, I'll push back, but, like, your point stands about there being something else, but Last Leaf is, like, looking for the key, right?
Yeah, but was Last Leaf running the infrastructure operation?
You're right. Last Leaf probably doesn't have, like, his certification for running this instrument.
No. Yeah. Like, if somebody asked me about how to put a drawbridge down, I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Right.
I'd have less to say than Last Leaf.
Call the help desk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd be like, there's probably a key somewhere. That's my guess.
Okay, fair point. I love it. but also, okay.
Yeah.
Later on, we learn. I'm kind of jumping ahead here.
That's fine.
Because later on, this becomes critical to their plans, and they go get the key, mm-hmm. which was just next door.
Yeah.
But a dragon is protecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, like, he just, like, runs in and grabs it.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. So, like, I realized that our band is really good at stuff.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah.
But could someone else have to, again, critical infrastructure, folks. Like, an instantaneous way to go across the wild. And it's like, we just got to get it out from under this dragon.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say a few things for this. Number one, I would say 80% of the work for a heist is knowing where the money is.
Okay.
And there's very few people that actually know where this thing is. The other 20% is having the skills to take it. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the perfect combo here. Yeah. Now, do I think Maddie is the best at heisting? No, clearly not. But I think they knew what they were looking for.
Sure.
Now, Lastleaf, does Lastleaf know it's there? I feel like he does, right?
I feel like he does too. This is my main thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, why didn't he just run in and grab it?
And
he has a horde there.
But I don't think he could convince the horde to go take on this dragon. Right?
Okay.
Like, the horde seems to be an entity that needs to attack people, right?
Sure.
And then if you're suddenly like, hey guys, we have now a three-step plan to get in the city. The first step is to fight this dragon over here. If I'm a gnoll or something, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay here because as soon as I leave, the people are going to come out and they're not going to be as delicious anymore.
Okay. Okay.
Or they're going to escape or whatever. I feel like getting the horde to do something like this would be a challenge. Now, Lastleaf has a lot of abilities. I feel like Lastleaf could just go kill the dragon and take it.
Yes, that's what. Yes, I agree.
Unless there is a Druin Hell, and you go to Druin Hell if you kill a dragon.
That could be it. Yeah.
And Lastleaf's like, look, I'm a bad guy, but I am not killing a dragon.
It does seem pretty unforgivable for a druid to kill a dragon. I agree with you.
It feels that way, at least. It feels like it's an unforgivable sin.
Yeah. I guess my big thing is that, like, so far our crew is 2-0 against this dragon.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think I asked this in the beginning, like in our first episode on this book, but I still don't really understand why our crew seems to be, like, what their advantages are beyond, like okay, so this dragon is sitting in these very famous ruins with, everybody knows it's like a famous dragon. Dragons have hordes of gold or whatever valuable stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also are incredibly dangerous to be next to.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's a main major city next to this thing.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, it's like, okay, we do have to do something about the dragon.
Mm.
And this is a dragon that can reasonably be defeated by a 5-man crew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are we doing?
Sorry, Luke, are you criticizing the people of Dale? Are you criticizing our good friend Bilbo and his trio of dwarven companions who are going to go retake the Lonely Mountain? Or are you talking about a different book? Sorry, I was confused here which one you were talking about.
this is a good point. but no, I am referring to this book. Kings of the Wild.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Kings of the Wild and why this, like, actual trained burglar was the one to, like, go in and deal with this dragon who wasn't even terrorizing the town, was just kind of...
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I stand by what I said.
I think Luke's being a goof, and I'm happy to goof on it. Our band is the best band that ever existed, Luke.
Why?
Because they're good at shit. I don't know. Why is any band good? Because they're...
Yeah, but, like, how much better, I guess, is my question.
I mean, they seem to be a lot better.
Yeah, but it's unrealistic for them to be, like, several orders of magnitude better.
Luke, did you hear how quickly Maddie was able to stab things with his two knives?
It was
so fast.
I did, yeah. It was.
I think that's got to count for something, Luke.
Okay. You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. Plus, Gabe, great speaker.
Yeah, a good orator. So it's got to count
for really
something.
That's really important, especially when you lose your bard all the time. Really good for motivating the team.
Who's signing up to be bards, by the way? Because here's the thing. If I'm musically inclined, I'm not skipping fighting class to go practice my instrument. Like, I'm still going to be playing my instrument as a hobby, but I'm joining a band as, like, a member. I'm not joining a band as a bard. I'm joining a band as, like, a fighting member who also can compose songs. Because I understand why bards would be a thing people do, because it's probably super profitable to be able to write one of these sweet songs. And like,
people probably love it. If you get a banger, then you're set. Yeah.
And so like, yeah, I'm going to be working on that banger the whole time we're out with the group. But I'm not going to.
And if you're with a band that reliably produces bangers, then it's like, yeah, I'm going to take that.
And then you get to be part of it? Are you kidding me? You get to put yourself in the banger?
Right. Let's dive into this a little bit more.
Okay.
Because let's weigh how much time you spend training your musical abilities versus your fighting abilities.
Yes.
Because it seems like bards lean heavily into the musical abilities in this book.
Yes.
And my thing is, I agree with you because I don't think that like technical skill is really the deciding factor in whether you get a banger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's in the event is like number one. And then it's probably just like creativity with lyrics.
Right. Composition. You don't need to be able to perform the song that you're writing. You just need to compose a banger.
Right. It needs to be like, you need to be acceptable at playing your instrument. So I'm putting like practicing instrument versus other stuff. I'm putting practicing instrument like 10% of the time.
Also, Luke, okay. Wait, because there's even more to this, right? There's even more to this. How much time do we see our band practicing fighting?
Zero.
We don't see a single training session, and we don't even hear about them going through a training.
Right.
So like, how much time are they spending on that stuff? Doesn't seem like a ton.
Right. Yeah, this maybe is a unique scenario, though, because they're on a journey.
Okay, great. Guess what, Luke? They're walking for a large part of that journey, or riding in their skyship, or doing things that are not actively fighting.
Right.
Welcome to practice time, guys. Maybe it would have been too on the nose if every single person in a band was also practicing an instrument the whole time they were going around.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Yeah. I honestly never even realized that they never practice anything. Gotta shake off that rust, folks. You haven't fought in like 20 years.
Yeah, especially that. That I think is the craziest part, is they just like pick up weapons after 20 years and are like, oh yeah, it's like riding a bike.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Speaking of bards, Luke. How does Kit work? Do you understand this? Do you have a headcanon for how Kit works?
In terms of like how he's immortal?
Yeah, because he gets damaged a lot.
Right, and he says that he dies and then like comes back.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I was confused by this as well because I thought when we were first introduced that he had died once and been like reanimated somehow.
Yeah.
But he could still die again.
No.
But it seems like he is literally unpermanently killable.
Yes. Yes. But he takes damage. Like he's got a big gash in his neck now.
Well, the gash in his neck is from his original death, right?
Is it? I thought it was from a gash that he got on our journey.
Okay, so I do think that he takes damage currently. Yeah. I don't recall if he, like, heals it.
I feel like he has to, but also I feel like there was a lot of times where he took damage and that damage persisted over time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, because I was operating under the assumption that he took persistent damage. And in that world, I was like, you just turn into mush eventually. The undying mush that, like, you're broken a lot.
Right. So he looks kind of like a zombie, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't like to be called zombie, but is he literally wrapped in stuff? I forget.
Well, when we meet him, he's naked.
So. Okay. He must be regenerating a little bit, right?
I feel like
he can just, like, make a new body whenever. And so when he dies, he just makes a new body? Could that be it?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, what if it's grislier than that? What if he has to, like, take a body?
Mm.
You know? And this is why...
Like a dead body that's in the ground, you mean?
Maybe. Maybe this is why Cal was saying he needed to stay locked up. Cal was like, hey, look, we got to keep this guy in this coffin because otherwise he's going to be going crazy. Taking bodies, making bodies.
Taking and making, yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be. He seems kind of delightful, though.
He does seem too nice for that, yeah. I don't know. I don't know how this works. Maybe it's slow regeneration.
He's also the only... I also didn't really understand why... He's the only one that this has ever happened to because he got killed by a phoenix?
No, he got bit by a phoenix and then killed afterwards.
Right.
So I guess a phoenix bite turns you into this?
Okay.
But listen, Luke, listen. It doesn't sound like a great condition to have.
I don't know.
it sounds like it's kind of a hell. Like, he doesn't have any friends who are alive anymore. He is gross. He's really gross to look at.
Right.
I feel like this is not ideal. Especially considering... It sounds like there's evidence of an afterlife.
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. I will say... To you and me, maybe it doesn't sound that good. There are plenty of people, at least in stories, that is, that are like pursuing immortality by any means.
Sure, sure.
And so they would hear this and they'd be like, yeah, obviously those are issues. I don't care.
Sign me up. I'll moisturize.
And it's like, oh, you just, exactly. It's like, oh, you just get bit by a phoenix and then someone kills you. That's fine.
I can do that. Or give me a phoenix. You don't have one? I'm going to go find one. Now I'm on a quest.
Fetch me a phoenix. I don't know. It seems like there's more out there. There's got to be more of these guys, right?
I mean, there's at least one.
Like, okay, you're telling me Phoenix? There's never been another Phoenix bite? What are Phoenixes doing? What do you got? Phoenixes, get out there and start defending yourselves, okay? You just dying and being reborn constantly? Bite some people.
Okay, Luke, first of all, maybe they have. Okay, we don't know. Maybe there's more out there. Maybe Kit's just the first one that we've seen. That's for the first one I want to say. The second one I want to say is I appreciate the pacifist nature of these phoenixes. Phoenix is the perfect creature to be a pacifist, by the way.
Right, because they get reborn.
Yeah, you don't have to protect your own life because it's fine. You're going to be all right. I appreciate their pacifist stance, their commitment.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that should be our assumption of phoenixes going forth. Mm-hmm. The natural state of Phoenicians is
Phoenicians, pacifism. Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm done with phoenixes and revenants.
Okay.
If you are.
Yeah. Let's move on.
So the way that they overcome this challenge is that they teleport to where this big festival is being held, right?
Yes.
And there's a bunch of bands there. And Gabe gives a great speech, very rousing speech, mm-hmm. and gets everyone to actually go fight. And like, I'm gonna do the thing where I have logistical questions uh-huh. about this society.
Okay.
Classic. And I'm trying to figure out how all these bands are financially viable.
Hmm.
And like I want an like we've read Orconomics,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And like I can't quite figure it out because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And what I can tell is that like in this current society mm-hmm. of the last like 10 years, they basically are just like an entertainment group.
Yes.
Right? Because they're, again, this is, it's referencing literal bands.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that really where all the money is coming from?
For sure, Luke.
Okay.
Like, Luke, for every national touring band, like literal musical band that exists, there's like 10 local bands.
Right.
That are supported by their like local city infrastructure. They like go to bars and like that entertainment's huge, Luke. What other sources of entertainment is there? It's like drinking or going to the arena and watching some bands kick ass.
Okay.
And occasionally they go into the Heartwild and like bring back a chimera or something. That seems valuable. Also, Luke, we're living in a post-scarcity world, okay?
Okay, true, true. Yeah, when in a post-scarcity world, you go heavy on entertainment. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, fine, yeah. I guess I was just shocked because, like, they talk about how massive this horde is.
Yeah.
And this goes back to, like, how good is one individual mercenary?
Okay, this is my sort of question as we're in the fight that's going on right now.
Before we get there, can I do one more logistical thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
This horde is enormous, right?
Massive.
How are we feeding these guys?
Great question.
Where are my monster supply lines?
I mean, I do have a solution for this, but it's going to be kind
of
like...
If you bring out the hat, I'm going to lose my mind.
All right, we won't talk about the hat anymore. But maybe they don't... Okay, actually, I know the solution to this. There's a lot of dead bodies.
Okay.
And they talk about how the horde is just eating the dead people.
Right.
So...
All right, I mean,
it probably can't last for that long, but it sounds like there's a lot.
It does sound like there's a lot. I would say another viable option for the siege is to drop care packages, considering we have flying ships.
Oh. Well, no, Luke, because the air is surrounded by like harpies and stuff.
Yeah, you can get through.
Alternative, Luke. Big trebuchet.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Launch them in there.
I'm always here for a big trebuchet.
Another alternative, Luke. Tunnel.
Well, I think they tried that, didn't they?
Bigger tunnel, though. What about a bigger tunnel?
Go bigger and smaller. See which one's best.
Another idea. See if there's any mirrors around that are a portal into Castia.
Okay.
Have everybody see if their mirror is a magical portal.
Just try to everyone jump in every mirror you can find. See if it works.
See if it puts you in Castia.
Okay. That's a logistical question. Now let's talk fighting abilities.
So during this battle, the sense of scale that I got was like, yeah, there's a lot of bands that have come through to help. Mm-hmm. But like, it was a lot of bands. It wasn't like an insane number of bands that came through to help.
Yeah.
And the size of the horde is insane. Is like truly mind-boggling. There is no speech that Gabriel could give that I would be like looking around at the number of people there. At one point they talk about like 30 and 40,000 people like screaming out in response to Gabriel. That's a lot of people, right? A lot of people. Mm-hmm. I feel like that number of people fighting the horde is, it's even more than like what would be considered heroic. Do you know what I mean? Like when Clay is putting together his idea of what's going to happen, he's like, there is literally no hope of us being able to do anything with this. And with like 40,000 mercenaries, like some of the scenes were giants just like stepping on people left and right.
Yeah. Some of the like monsters were killing tons of people.
Right. And it sounds like the horde is made up of a lot of things like this.
Yeah.
How are we doing this, guys? I don't know. Maybe just like the way that scene was working for me was like, so this is not going to work, right? This is going to this is going to fail pretty badly.
Or it was like Rose was going to get out because they created a like wedge that could get all the way to the city.
Yeah.
But at the cost, like she was going to survive, but like at the cost of 30,000 mercenaries.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Which is kind of true, but I mean, they are ultimately victorious. So they also save the city, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still, I mean, okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing. So it is kind of like they beat the head guy and then the big demon thing.
Yeah.
And then all of the monsters kind of break and run. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm not sure what, like how much of the horde they actually kill.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that, like their plan was not to go kill the infernal.
Right.
So like, how are you going to win without that? Like, is Gabe just a master manipulator? Like, is he just so good at manipulating young people to do what he wants? Is this a problem? Should we be concerned?
It could be. It could be.
Because, like, so many people died for this. Granted, it worked out. But, right. Like, there was no plan.
Well, really, they just needed to kill Last Leaf.
Well,
for setting aside the actual mission, which is to rescue Rose, mm-hmm. right? Looking at, like, humanity as a whole, we really just need to kill Last Leaf. Because even if the Horde doesn't immediately disperse and, like, actually still tries to take the city, like, you can rebuild the city and all that stuff.
Right.
The Horde's not going to, like, occupy it.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
And then lead a war against humanity without Last Leaf.
Right. Correct. Correct.
And so it actually would have been better if we just led a little assassination team and we don't lose the lives of, like, 30,000 people.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe... Oh, Luke. No. Here's what you do. There are monsters that live among people.
Mm-hmm.
That's your assassination crew.
Right.
You go to those kobolds that Gabe had holding his money and you're like, hey, look, I've got a deal for you. You all will be able to sneak into this horde, no questions asked. I'm going to give you this poison dagger. You stab Last Leaf, or even just like put it to where his foot will step on it, because he's gonna know if you try and stab him, but just like somehow get him with this poison dagger, and like kobold kind will be heralded for eternity. Like, you guys are gonna be tight with us from now on.
Right. Counterpoint, Dan. He was in the stadium when they were fighting the Chimera. He was in the, like,
oh fuck,
special,
I forgot about that
box. He was like, have recently proclaimed my intention to destroy humanity. Also, I'm going to go to this football game first.
Hey, Luke, wouldn't be the first time, huh?
What are we doing? I don't think he even has his wyvern in there with him.
No.
Easy. He's got easy time.
He's got good security, Luke.
Frustrated. Frustrated with this.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's true. That's true. I don't know, Luke.
Anyway, big battle at the end here. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff going on. I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The just like chaos of it.
Turned out pretty good for our crew.
Turned out quite well. They only got bruises here and there.
Yeah, and like a ton of other people died, but we never even really knew them very much. So
that's pretty cool.
Pretty good for everybody involved.
Well, and then also, well, we'll see, but maybe their old booker hasn't shown up yet. So maybe
things
he
are looking
die.
Up. hopefully he did. I think there is another book after this, though.
There is, yes. So we'll see.
Before we get to reviews, because I feel like we're getting close.
Yeah.
How hard do you think it was for Last Leaf to not spoil the surprise that the human pantheon is just like his story?
Pretty tough.
How hard do you think it was for him to be like, God, this would be, I would destroy them right now if I just revealed this to them, that their whole belief system is based on my life, like my literal life, like I am their god of fall.
I feel like it would be, for a long time, he's been there like, how do I bring this up in a way that seems like I'm not bragging? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there was times where he's like telling a story and he inadvertently, but not actually inadvertently, refers to his dad as the name of the god. And it's like, oh, sorry. You know him as this.
Oh, man. But, okay, here's the thing, though. Last Leaf loves to be dramatic.
Yeah.
It's one of his favorite things. And yeah. He, like, hates a lot of these people. Oh, he could have just decimated them. Just, I think the problem was he was waiting for the right moment and he never got it.
He waited for too much buildup.
This is the thing. If you wait this long, you're never going to have the chance to actually cash in.
He was assuming that, because right, if he had won, there was going to be a lot more after this of his war against the other cities and stuff like that. Yeah. So he was saving it for one of those. Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
Tough. I feel bad for him.
Would have been epic. Would have been an epic reveal, frankly.
Yeah. Okay. You want to do reviews?
Yeah, let's do reviews, Luke. I'll keep it short here. Yeah. This book I thought was very fun. The quest kept moving. It was very low stakes. Nothing really like that bad happened to our characters. There weren't really any like consequences for a lot of stuff. I was thinking like, oh, interesting, Clay's gonna be down a hand. Oh, that's gonna be interesting to see what happens. And it was like, nope, he got his hand back, don't worry about it. Which at first I was like, ah, that's kind of annoying. It would have been interesting to see what, like, how he survived without a hand. But then I was like, that's more of a Joe Abercrombie sort of a book. This is not right. That so I liked it. I was having fun in the book. The band stuff was kind of funny. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think once I made the adjustment to recognizing this was kind of just like a popcorn book, I'll call it, where it's just, yeah, it's just fun. Then I really started to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had a fun time reading it. I think my review's not much more than that, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I think there's areas that you can like start to pick apart, but that's kind of my point on like, once you make the adjustment to realizing that this is just like a fun book,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have to do that.
No.
It's like, yeah.
You can just have fun. Good.
It's nice.
Have fun with it. Yeah. It has a very like fun tale atmosphere. It ends like with a nice bow. Everybody gets their happy ending. It's yeah. nice. It's just kind of a nice tale.
There we go. Cool. Okay. Fairly positive reviews then.
Yeah. You don't want to talk about the pros, right. Luke?
I'm not going to talk about the pros this time.
Not this time.
You'll be shocked to hear. Okay. That'll wrap up our Kings of the Wild series. Next book, Dan. What do we got?
Next book is A Memory Called Empire by Arkady Martin, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some sci-fi.
A little sci-fi. Yep.
We'll do the first third for next week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see y'all then. We'll be bringing the hot takes.
And being dumb nerds.